This call is being recorded.
Welcome to Ask Quinn, everyone. Today I have Mackenzie with me, and we're going to talk about her book, Dealing with Depression. And so if you have kids in the background, if you are listening to Ask Quinn with kids, this won't be a good episode to listen to with kids, because depression is a hairy, scary subject, and it's, I'm happy to have Mackenzie on to talk about her book and to talk about why she wrote it. But before I bring Mackenzie in, I have a couple programming announcements. Today, you get what you get, the true and raw cerebral palsy, because I'm in pain, and you get what you get. And so the other programming announcement is that we're slowly making the transition over to Libsyn off of Simplecast, but we still have the Simplecast feed while we're making the transition. And so I'll let you guys know, I'll keep you guys updated on the transition, and I'll let you guys know when the transition is completely over with the 301 redirect, so you can find Ask Quinn again. But I'm going to let Mackenzie take it away and explain why she wrote the book.
Hi. It's great here in South Florida. I'm so excited to be with you today, Quinn. The book, the manuscript still. I'll be querying it very soon. I wrote the book because there are not a lot of titles on mental illness, bipolar, from the point of view of a patient who's high functioning, and how close to normal they, you know, a normal productive life that they can live if they just stick with their treatment plan.
Okay. So you wrote the book because you're high functioning, but yet you have these disabilities.
Yes.
So how did you first get diagnosed with depression and bipolar? I mean, how did it come about?
I'm going to try not to say too much. I'm sorry. After the death of my father, I spiraled downward, and I couldn't function at work, and I lost my job. From there, I couldn't afford my apartment, and I just slipped into a fantasy world of living with someone who I had a crush on for many years and couldn't be with him. Wound up back in Florida with my family, completely manic, psychotic. And when I was checked into the hospital, I was surprised to be in a psychiatric ward. And when the diagnosis came that bipolar depression, I didn't accept that the diagnosis meant the condition was permanent. So I stayed on the meds until I felt better, which was a considerable amount of time that I was better. But the manic episode kept coming until I really couldn't function without the med and couldn't stay out of the psychiatric ward without the med.
Okay. So the manic episodes kept coming and you couldn't stay out of the psychiatric ward without the meds.
Exactly.
Well, how did you get off the meds? I mean, are you still on meds to this day? And how, so you're still on meds. You now are writing a book because you're high functioning. A lot of people with depression and bipolar are low functioning. I don't happen to have depression or bipolar. I'm not bipolar by any means, but I do. I am dealing with grief right now because I just lost my dad in May.
Oh, so, I'm so sorry.
Well, that's okay. But you and I have a closer path than I thought we did, because I could go down that depressive route. I choose not to, but people with disabilities, because we're trapped in our own bodies, we could get depressed. And so what would be your best advice for someone who isn't in a mental hospital, hopefully listening to this podcast, and we want to raise awareness about the mental stigma of disabilities, hidden or unhidden? Yours is hidden, and mine is unhidden. Mine is cerebral palsy. And so what would be your best advice for someone who is about to go down into that spiral of, I'm depressed, I can't get dressed, I can't function, I can't eat, I can't do anything, I can't do anything without help? I know. What is your best advice?
If someone is experiencing a mental health challenge, it doesn't necessarily have to be chronic and it doesn't have to be permanent. Everyone has some kind of challenge to their emotional state. For example, if it's dealing with the loss of a loved one, a death of a loved one, I would recommend visiting a website called grief.com. It's very clear that depression related to that kind of loss is not a mental health diagnosis. It's a phase of the depression cycle. I'm in a phase of the grief cycle, and it's perfectly normal. It would be abnormal not to grieve.
Okay.
So that's one specific resource for a specific reason. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a death. You know, we could grieve the loss of a best friend who moves away and we never see them again. I think that people go through a similar cycle. If it's a mental health crisis, and I can only talk really with any kind of clarity about bipolar, the manic episodes, psychosis, and the depression, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, has support groups affiliated with them throughout the country. And a support group, you'll be surrounded by people who are at varying levels, varying degrees of functionality at any given time. In that case, maybe some people, it's a challenge just to ride the bus by themselves. They need support if you're a high-functioning person. If you're not, if you are the person who has a hard time just riding the bus or being a passenger in a car, you have anxiety, whatever, then the leader of the group can help provide more resources. People in the group who are high-functioning can provide support. And I'm also finding now, because I was just looking for a comparable title to my manuscript that is part of my query package, there are more and more books. Recently, people sharing their stories, either themselves, a loved one, in the grip of some kind of mental health crisis or chronic condition. So I'll be reading those. And I can report back, I guess, on my blog how I feel my manuscript compares and the messages in those books.
I did see that on Twitter. And I hate to do a self-plug here, but I have a chronic condition of CP. I also have chronic back pain, which that's own as a story in itself. And maybe you should read how I did my book to see how I am dealing with my chronic condition, even though bipolar and cerebral palsy are completely two different beasts. But I'm happy to help you out. I'm happy to help all of you out with any questions you may have about cerebral palsy and how I deal with it. Now, granted, I have a pretty positive attitude about it, but there are days I'm not perfect, and today as we're recording this interview, I am not perfect. It's not my perfect day, so granted, but I chose to get up, get dressed, get dressed, and go to work and record these podcasts. And the reason why today's not perfect for me and my body is because my stepmom decided to surprise attack me last night and say, oh, by the way, I'm going down to Denver to get your father's medical records. Because my dad was her fiance, and she wants peace and comfort and justice for my dad. And, yeah. And I woke up this morning in a severe amount of pain, and I'm, that's how my body goes to grief. So, thank you for telling me, Mackenzie, that I'm not nuts by saying if I do get depressed today, that would be a normal sign, because loss of a loved one, I've gone through this twice now, and loss of a loved one is tough, especially when they're undiagnosed, and then they're diagnosed, and with a whirlwind of cancer, lung cancer, which isn't very nice, and it's not very promoted very heavily, and so I'm happy to promote bipolar. I'm happy to have you come on and share this story with us and my listeners.
Well, I am even more appreciative for your time, knowing that it's a rough day for you.
Well, I can get through this with help, but I want to know from you, what is your favorite chapter that you have written in a book so far?
Oh, goodness. Favorite chapter is 11. It's not on the blog. But chapter 11 is a conversation, a very tense conversation between the main character, Michelle, and her mother, where her mother is blaming someone for Michelle's anger and her bipolar and slipping off into a fantasy world, but he's completely innocent. He's one of her advocates. And that's a great chapter. Other favorite chapter, I have two favorite chapters. Other favorite chapter includes Michelle's birthday and a family gathering with her boyfriend, Joe. And after that, they visit the cemetery in Atlanta to pay respects to Joe's deceased daughter. And it's a very emotional scene, but it's not sappy. It's not too mushy.
Yeah.
And it's just a really beautiful chapter towards the end.
Yeah. So would you ever consider the bout of self-publishing? Or absolutely no way?
It's a last resort. I wouldn't write it off, because at this point the manuscript is pretty strong. For my own sense of validation, I would like the traditional publishing route, even though it doesn't have to be Big Five.
Yeah.
But barring that, if the rejections just pile up to the point that the traditional publishers won't touch it for whatever reason, I would definitely consider self-publishing.
They wouldn't touch a memoir about cerebral palsy with... And trust me, I looked way back when. They won't touch a memoir with cerebral palsy with a 10-foot pole. So good luck making them a touch a book about bipolar and depression. And so can you tell my listeners what, when you were in the psychiatric hospital, what was the darkest day?
The doctors, they all pretty much said the same thing. You know, blood work, the hormones were out of balance. I needed to stick with the meds. At first, I was on antidepressants and I think an antipsychotic. And then the side effects, they weren't fantastic. I remember specifically being on Lexapro and that made me feel very lethargic. But the doctor wouldn't change the prescription. At some point in the last year, year and a half, they took me off of the old medications and put me on something more, on something newer called Abilify. And I have very, very few side effects, if any, with that. And I'm very pleased. As long as there's no psychotic episodes, I'm just happy.
You are just happy to be alive. And
yes.
How, I want to ask you this, how could I friend and family member know if a person is having a psychotic episode? I mean, what are the warning signs for undiagnosed bipolar? Is there warning signs, or are we just swimming upstream here?
It's actually really tough for me to say because when I am psychotic, I'm in and out of consciousness, aware and not aware. And it just, but I would say one thing is if a person that you suspect is manic or psychotic says the sky is blue and then a minute later the next day, I never said that. What are you talking about? Very, very little self-awareness of plain things that they said or done. That could easily be one warning sign.
I now that you mentioned it, I think my dad was going into a state of depression after he was diagnosed with lung cancer because he went into, I'm not kidding, the day he got diagnosed on May 14th, 2019, because he passed away of a heart attack May 19th. So he was only diagnosed 3 days. And I'm not kidding. He went into, I don't want to see anyone. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to live anymore. So I think he went into a state of depression. I think he went into state of denial. And I, when I saw him that Thursday, I said, my first response was, "You look good." And he just laughed at me with the oxygen mask over his face. And I said one of his favorite expressions, "Rock on." And he replied, "Rock on." But he went in the day he was diagnosed, Wednesday, May 14th. I remember distinctly because I was back at the hotel. I didn't go to the official diagnosis. My stepsister and my mom went, and the official diagnosis took forever and a day. And so that's why I didn't go, and because I wasn't hanging out waiting for the official diagnosis. I knew exactly what it was, and I was ready to make decisions on my own and so on. That's why I needed to stay back at the hotel. But I have never, and for those of you who know me personally, and for those of you who've seen pictures of my dad, you know that he was an outgoing guy. I have never seen an outgoing guy turn as quickly as he did. He turned into himself like there was no tomorrow. And when you get diagnosed with a big life-threatening illness like cancer, you become depressed. And he didn't want to admit that he was depressed.
Wow, that's hard.
So, yeah, that's hard. And it was hard for me to watch. It was
of
hard
course.
For me to watch the spiral go down. And and sitting here today, I'm like, I want to see those medical records, well, they're coming back to me. I want to see those medical records because I want to know if the doctors wrote down this person that was depressed, because I have never seen a 6'2" tall gentle giant go into depression as quickly as he did. And I said, no, I'm not going into depression. I'm staying strong for everyone. Although I do have my moments, I do have my grieving moment. And so I just feel like the more and more we can get bipolar out there, and the more and more we can talk about depression, the better, because depression has a stigma to it, and bipolar has a stigma to it, and I want to see breaking in the disabled community.
Yes, the stigma is real. More and more people are getting diagnosed with some sort of mental disability. 1 in 5, 1 in 6, 1 in 4, depends on what numbers you see. But, you know, I was watching Touched with Fire, which is Kate Jameson's story of having a bipolar diagnosis. And, you know, just from my own personal perspective, every movie that I've seen that touches on mental illness, with the exception of A Beautiful Mind, take viewers into the psychiatric ward, where people are clearly needing help. They're sick, and it's a sickness that people don't understand. It just looks like bizarre behavior or scary behavior. And I think that that helps perpetuate the stigma, because it doesn't bridge the person, it doesn't bridge readers or viewers into the loss of normal life that the protagonist is experiencing. So with my manuscript, This Darkness Is Mine, I really take readers through how normal Michelle's life can be. There's the one scene in the psychiatric ward, but she doesn't know why she's there. And she's actually scared of the other patients. She's never had a mental health crisis before. She's never been in a psychiatric ward before. And I think it helps keep the stigma at bay, because people can empathize with Michelle first and foremost as a productive member of society with family ties, a good job, a nice apartment, a decent life. And then she's ripped out of it.
And I know you mentioned this on Twitter, because I know you and I went back and forth. And yes, Mackenzie does follow me on Twitter. And I know you mentioned this on Twitter. You mentioned something about 9/11, and you mentioned being there on 9/11. And so you mentioned to all of us, where were you? And I told you where I was. And so was that your first job before you got diagnosed with bipolar, or was that just a temporary job, or what was that?
That was a temporary assignment, and it was, 2001. The diagnosis didn't come until 2007, so that was a couple of jobs before the diagnosis, before the first psychotic break.
Okay.
So 9/11, I was, you know, undiagnosed, no symptoms.
Well, looking back on it, do you think 9/11 had something to do with your psychotic break?
I really don't, because I handled 9/11 like a champ.
We all did. All handled 9/11 like a champ. So what were you doing, if you don't mind me asking, what were you doing before your psychotic break?
I was an administrative assistant in financial services.
Okay, financial services. Well, I'm happy that you're back up on your feet, and I'm happy that you're publishing a book, no matter what happens. Traditionally published or self-published, you're at least have one sale from me because now I'm curious. Now I'm curious as to read this book because, and I'm sure you're going to keep all your fan abreast of what happens on Twitter. And I know that the manuscript, the querying process is a long slog. Trust me, you guys, I have done it, and I'm now in the process of working with a small publisher and to publish a book about podcasting. I just haven't figured that one quite out yet. Probably it will be published as soon as I get the finances together. Probably it will be published in October or November because I unfortunately need to pay them to publish my book, which I'm perfectly fine with doing. But I wish you, Mackenzie, the best of luck with querying manuscripts because I know it's a long slog and working with a publisher of any size, unless you go the independent route, is a long slog. And so you'll at least have one sale. And here's my advice. Put your book on audio because you'll reach a lot more readers that way. And I'm coming to discover that the able-bodied like audio as much as the disabled. So if you get traditionally published or if you decide to do the self-publishing, well, get your book on audio. That would be my sage advice. And as we tie this interview up, do you have any questions for me?
You've answered so many very eloquently, very graciously. I guess my biggest question is, what stigma about cerebral palsy are you hoping to overcome, challenge, and destroy?
I am hoping that the stigma that I want to overcome, and I want to teach people about on a daily basis, and this is why I'm quitting my job in education to become a content creator, because I was ready to quit my job when my dad got diagnosed. I mean, I knew that it was going to be a trying summer anyway, but I was ready to quit my job at the end of the last year, and I decided to do it at the end of this year so that I could become a full-time writer and a full-time content creator. But the biggest stigma that I want to break is that we may not have perfect days like today, but we're still humans and love us as if you loved anyone else. Love us as if you loved anyone else, and do not treat the superpowers of cerebral palsy like a box of rocks, because 9 times out of 10, I also have a traumatic brain injury, which I don't talk about very often because I choose not to, but I have a double disability on top of I have scoliosis, which I got fixed in 2006, and then I have a traumatic brain injury, and I use a walker to walk. And so my point being is, don't judge a book by its cover, especially when that book has cerebral palsy or bipolar, and you'll be amazed what the bipolar and cerebral palsy community can bring if you just respect us and love us just the way we are.
Beautiful.
So that's my piece. And where can people find you, and where can people get a hold of you if they choose to do so?
Definitely on Twitter. My handle on Twitter is at Mackenzie, LITT13. The blog is a little long, but there's a link to my blog in my Twitter bio, and that's a great place to find out what I'm up to. I'm reasonably sure my email address is on there, but it's MackenzieLittledaleWrites@gmail.com. And that's really where I'm at.
That's really where you're at. And I appreciate the support, you guys, as we're going through this transition of my own personal life and a vast win for Doug. But I truly appreciate Mackenzie coming on and sharing her story. And I hope you found inspiration from Mackenzie's story. And when the book comes out, of course, I'll be promoting the book because I know this author behind the scenes now. And so please keep us updated on the publishing journey, whether it's going to be self-published or traditionally published. And I'll keep my fan base abreast, those who are not on Twitter. And please follow Mackenzie on Twitter. You can also follow me, Wynn, W-I-N, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Charles, C-H-A-R-L-E-E-S. It's my full name, and it's me holding Wynn as my Twitter profile picture. And so I appreciate the support, you guys, and I'll catch you guys later. Bye, you guys.
Thanks so much.